Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal, and may lose value.
Looking to step up your Mother's Day flowers? The Home Depot has an idea. Let Mom's green thumb do some digging with colorful flowers, pots, and premium soils to bring out the most in her patios, walkways, and gardens. Right now, get Vigoro Potting Soil, just $8.97 for strong, healthy, vibrant plants indoors and outside. Shop our wide selection online and pick up your order in-store and give Mom the gift of a beautiful garden. Get Vigoro Potting Soil, just $8.97 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Julie Douglas.
Julie, I think most of our listeners probably tuned in to our episode, Future Shock. So they are probably familiar with the concept. But even if they are not familiar with the concept of Future Shock, I think they might feel a little of it once they're through with this episode.
Yeah, because the Topplers in Future Shock talked about this idea of having these sort of neural prosthetics. They didn't call them that, but it's more like brain computer interfaces. And this was a wild idea in the 70s, but hey, let's get real here. I mean, this thing is happening in 2003. The world's first brain prosthesis was put into an animal. And then just this year, there was an auditory brain implant in a toddler. So we can see that this is becoming more and more common. And I attended a panel at the World Science Festival on this very topic. It's called Cells to Silicon, Your Brain in 2050. 2050 or 2030, by the way, always seems to be like the year that all this stuff is going to be here for real. I don't know if you've noticed that. But they talked about the steps that they're taking right now to make this more of a reality. And we'll talk about that in a second.
Yeah, to your point, 2030, 2050, those are the new 2000s, I guess, the years we can look to and say, this is the technology we're going to have. This is the life we're going to have because of these advancements. And to your point, we've seen some pretty impressive steps made thus far. I mean, a cyborg rat with the brain prosthesis and a cyborg toddler. It's pretty great.
Yeah.
Now, not to get too caught up in the idea of the cyborg, because as we've discussed before, technological adaptations on your body, inside your body, are becoming more and more every day, you know, ranging from a pacemaker to a wristwatch. And so we're just seeing the natural extrapolation of that idea.
Yeah, you're augmenting your natural abilities, right? I wear glasses, so I'm augmenting my vision.
Yeah, none of this makes anybody less human. All it does is either makes up for injuries or some sort of shortcomings in one's biology, or it is gaming the system a bit, or maybe gaming the system a lot, depending on what the augmentation is.
Well, and you would need this sort of gaming of the system quite a bit if you were someone like a, say, stroke patient who had lost the ability to move your limbs. And neuroscientist John Donahue was actually talking about this on the panel. Specifically, he referenced a stroke patient named Kathy, and he showed this film of her.
Mm-hmm.
She sustained permanent damage to her brain, and as a result, the axons that run along her spine and deliver information from her motor cortex to her limbs were incapacitated. And so she was relegated to a life in a wheelchair with others helping her to move and to feed her. And then she signed on to this 5-year experiment with Donahue and other researchers. And there was an implant inserted into her brain that interacted with robotic arms that would do some things for her, like get the coffee, like actually bring coffee to her lips, which she hadn't done for years.
Yeah, the video footage of this is pretty remarkable because, yeah, she has not, in over a decade, she has not raised a cup of coffee to her own lips of her own volition, and now she's doing it. She's thinking the robot arm into action. There's nothing, you know, she's not moving anything with her tongue. It's nothing with her muscles.
Mm-hmm.
It's all inside her mind. She's thinking about the movement, and it is happening. And it's amazing. It's the stuff that you would often think, even today, you tend to think of as science fiction. The idea that I'm commanding
mm-hmm.
a machine with my mind. I'm moving something other than my physical body with my mind. And yet here it is.
Yeah, it is amazing. And so like, how do you get your thoughts externally out there to do something for you? Well, it turns out that what you do is you insert a wire into the R motor cortex. And what this wire is doing, it's not a very big wire, so it's not like she's got things, you know, sticking out of her head.
Mm-hmm.
But what it's doing is it's fishing for neural spikes. Now, what are neural spikes? Okay. Every time neurons fire in the brain, they're shuttling ions back and forth, and there's an electrical potential change there. So if you have a wire inserted into the brain, that can detect that electrical change. And when it does, changes in ions when neurons stir about and meet, it will actually transmit information out to a computer to say, I detect neural activity here right now. And it's measuring that. So we've talked about this before with the Jennifer Aniston neurons.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what we called them. That when someone is thinking about Jennifer Aniston, some people, I should say, not everybody, you will see a spike in neuronal activity because there's a whole database of information and memory there related to Jennifer Aniston. And so the signal is really very strong. Well, the same thing happens when you're thinking and you're concentrating, like, I would like to move my arm right now, and I'm trying to think about moving my arm. All of those neurons would sort of coalesce together to give off a strong signal, and that's what that wire could detect.
Yeah, identifying what that signal looks like and then feeding it out to this machine. I often, in looking at this topic, I keep thinking of it in terms of a road, like a mountain road.
Mm-hmm.
The early examples we talked about, that the rat prosthesis that had to do with damaged hippocampus, or the toddler prosthesis, which specifically was an auditory brainstem implant.
Mm-hmm.
These are cases where you have point A, point B, and point C, all right? Yeah, you know, you have a road. Imagine a road across the mountains from your house to the store. But then that middle point is a part of the road that's washed away by a flood. So what do? You how do you get from A to C? Well, you put a bridge over it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what a lot of this technology is, figuring out how to fill in that gap, how to bridge that gap from a healthy part of the brain to another healthy part a healthy part of the chain
mm-hmm.
of action and reaction to bridge that gap in a way that lets you function again. And then in this we see a situation where we're not only bridging the gap, we're building the bridge out of the organism itself
mm-hmm.
into an external system, an external robotic system.
You're right, because in this case, point A is the neuronal activity.
Mm-hmm.
Point B would normally be those axons in her spine. But because they can't send those signals to the body, what we're doing here, or what researchers are doing, is they're taking those signals out externally, out of the organism, as you say, into the computer to decode that neuronal activity. And then point C would be the robotic arms instead of her own arms. And what is so amazing, so fascinating about this is that what they're doing is that they're taking the sounds that these neuronal spikes made,
mm-hmm.
and they're decoding them. So you might have like five blips that really mean move the arm to the right. You might have seven blips that are decoded as move the arm to the left. And that is then being put into the robotic arm as a command. So the fact that they can even take the information out and decode it in a way that makes sense, and then obviously matches up to what Kathy is thinking, because she can corroborate that, right?
Yeah, you really get the sense. It's almost like listening to a conversation through a wall, and they're making sense of it through in sort of indirect ways. But they're getting enough information out of it. They're getting enough of the points. They're highlighting those neural spikes, and then figuring out what it's asking for, and then reproducing it.
Now, the crazy thing about this is that they are getting this neuronal activity from just a sampling of the neurons, so maybe about 50 neurons out of the billions of neurons in your brain, or the billions of synapses. So that's just tiny. Mm-hmm. That tiny bit of neural activity can be picked up and then acted upon.
I believe in the talk you attended at World Science Festival, Robert Kroll, which compared it to voting, where you have like a small portion of the population that's voting and the rest are not voting, but you're figuring out what the public wants as a whole based on this small sample. And that's kind of what's happening here with this situation.
Yeah, definitely check this out. You can go to World Science Festival, to their website, and just look for Cells to Silicon, and you can see this talk. It's really great. So there are drawbacks to this, of course. There's the idea that it may not be something that you could have in your brain long term. Kathy's had it for 5 years. She hasn't had any problems, but we know that the body doesn't like foreign objects in it.
That's true. Also, it's worth noting that the robotic reach and grasp actions are not going to be as fast as accurate as those of an able-bodied person. I think that should be pretty obvious. We're not at the point in the technology where it's going to be a one-for-one, but it's a step in that direction.
Yeah, and Donahue says that the neural spikes are not always the same from trial to trial. In other words, those five blips might be six blips the next time, or seven, and so they have to figure out the pattern each time. And he said that it's very likely that those neural spikes are influenced by other conditions at the time. So it could be hunger, it could be a particular emotional state, or a physical state, which is all really fascinating, because we talked about proprioception before, and we talked about it in people who have lost the ability to move their limbs, and how all of this influences the body, the physical state of the body. So obviously it's not something that is perfect right now, but is the beginnings of something that could be really important, a kind of neural pixie dust of the future, and we'll get to that later.
Now, another fascinating example of this technology can be found in the work of Sheila Nirenberg, who is a neuroscientist working on technology for a prosthetic eye.
Yeah, because she says that more than 10 million people in the U.S. are blind or facing blindness because of diseases like macular degeneration.
Mm-hmm.
And for the vast majority of them, it's the prosthetic devices that are available right now that are their best hope. But the ones that are common right now are not necessarily the best. And she has created a neural prosthetic device that is amazing.
Yeah. Now, think back again to that analogy I made about the road.
Mm-hmm.
Point A, point B, and point C. And point B, that middle point, is washed out by a flood. How do you get across it? How do you build that bridge? So when you're looking at something just with normal vision, normal healthy vision, you have the image that's going to your eye. It's hitting your retina. And then the middleman, that point B, that is the retinal circuitry. And this essentially extracts information from it and converts it into a code. And these are electrical pulses that are sent to the brain. So, to your point, what do you do when the photoreceptors die? What do you do when one link in the chain vanishes?
Yeah, because that's what happens with macular degeneration. Mm-hmm. Those photoreceptors on the retina die off, and then over time all the other cells and the circuits that are connected to them die off too, rendering you effectively blind. So the only thing that you're left with are those output cells. And those are the ones that send the signals to the brain. But because of all that degeneration, they're not sending any signals anymore. And if you have a regular prosthetic for eyesight, You could allow a person to see bright lights or high contrast edges, but these are shadowy with like really no real detail. And what you're using in this regular prosthetic for eyesight is an encoder that takes in light, but the firing pattern is all over the place.
So what you need then is a device that can mimic the actions of that, of the front end circuitry of sight, send signals to the retina's output cells. And in this, you end up mimicking the actions of that front end circuitry. So you're taking the image, converting them into the retina's own code.
Yeah, what Nuremberg has created is this prosthetic device that has two parts, an encoder and a transducer. Now, the encoder mimics the actions of, you say, that front-end circuitry. And then the transducer makes the output cells send the code to the brain, and the result is this retinal prosthetic that can produce normal retinal output. And what we're talking about is a set of equations that they can implement on a chip. And so she's saying, hey, it's just math here. And that's the exciting part, is that if you take these two components of the prosthetic device, then you can mimic real eyesight in a person who is blind.
Yeah, it's pretty phenomenal. We're talking about the individual would wear a sort of camera that has an encoder of a device that's taking that information from the camera and translating it into the retina's code, translating it into a version that the brain can make sense of. You're talking about a real direct link between mechanical, artificial sensory and organic reasoning of that sense information.
Now, to get a sense of this, you should definitely check out the talk, because she shows two different examples of how this works with a regular prosthetic device and with this new one. Mm-hmm. And what she shows is sort of a readout of the neural firing activity in regular eyesight, the regular prosthetic and the new one. And you will see that in the new prosthetic and regular eyesight, those patterns are almost identical. It's not perfect, but that middle part, the regular one right now that just has the encoder that just takes in light, is very imperfect. And then she gives a second example of, she said, you know, we wanted to take a snapshot of what people were seeing, or what these primates were seeing, because I believe they're in human trials right now, clinical trials. But what those images that were seen, you see the regular eyesight, you see a baby's face. It's perfectly rendered, of course, right? Because mm-hmm. you have perfect eyesight. Then you have the regular prosthetic, and it's very shadowy. You can't even make out the pattern, which is amazing, because you know, you and I have discussed before how humans are pattern recognition machines, and yet there's not enough data points here to really make a clear picture. And then you have this new device that she came up with, and it is plain as day that that is the baby's face. It is not exact, but can you imagine being someone who has lost their sight, and you all of a sudden are hooked up with this neural prosthetic device for your eye, and you're able to see something as, I don't know, iconic and recognizable as a tree or a baby's face again?
Yeah, I mean, you would have some level of detail, as well as just an abstract idea of your environment.
Mm-hmm.
Just for navigational purposes. So it's pretty amazing stuff.
Yeah, and as you had said, this sort of washout areas, from points A to C, this is something that Nuremberg is imagining for the rest of the brain. So not just eyesight, but for a stroke victim. So in the cortex, trying to create this sort of communication center using the same sort of device.
Yeah, figuring any kind of situation where there's a gap, where there's a missing link in the chain or a damaged link in the chain, then we could conceivably go in there and build that bridge, that neural bridge, from point A to point C.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we get back, we're going to talk about the sort of neural dust that we may all have sprinkled into our brains in the year 2050.
Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product, and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astepro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astepro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astepro. Go to AstaproAllergy.com for a discount so you can get Astepro and go today. AstaproAllergy.com. Astepro and go. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
All right, we're back. So if you were not future shocked by the earlier information about sort of the current state and the pending state of these neural enhancements, then hold on to your britches, because we're about to look at where this could go, where this is going, and how it could dramatically change not only our lives, but what it is to be human.
Yeah, okay, so think back to Kathy and think about that wire in her brain, which I believe is referred to as brain gate. Michael Mahribitz has created a new kind of prosthetic in the form of these cubes as small as neurons. Okay, we're talking about 50 microns across.
Okay.
Now, the thing is that they don't work with electromagnetic frequency because they're too small. So you can't have something like a wire detecting them, but you can use sonogram to detect these. And what they're thinking is that you could have these sprinkled throughout your brain, and you would have all these different data points measuring that neuronal activity. And you could have a far more robust system that not only exports the sort of neuronal activity, the sort of thoughts that you're having, but maybe even imports information. So when you start to think about this neural dust, as it's called, and you start to see how you could have these prosthetics not just external to you, but implanted in you, and you could have this really very sophisticated system of information coming in and going out of your body, out of your brain.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about the ability to have more of a hands-on, real-time idea of what the brain is doing just throughout the course of the day, not just when you're hooked up to some machines or you're run through an fMRI. This would be like a daily constant understanding of what your brain is doing.
Yeah, and I mean, you see this, that the fact that you could have more of this neural dust spread throughout your brain, again, more data points of collection, more ability to import that data. But not only that, you could have this stuff in there maybe for the rest of your life. Because as we discussed before, the brain does not like foreign objects. But if you have something as tiny as a neuron, it's very possible that it could pass in the body as something that's supposed to be there.
Okay, so at conceivably then, at even an early age, you are injected, your brain is injected with this dust, and this dust is spread out through the brain, and it's all reporting and receiving information from the outside.
Well, right, so for someone like Kathy, for instance, she would get sort of an upgrade here, because again, let's assume that there's some sort of implant here, or a prosthetic device that could easily allow her to move her body around, and maybe even she could receive directions. And that's where this thing gets really weird, because you could effectively use this as a brain upgrade. And we talked about this before, and I think it was in monkeys, that they had their neural pathways tinkered with when they were making decisions. And the idea was you could increase neural activity in one direction so that they made specific movements or decisions about what they were about to do, the right decision, right? So what if you had this neural pixie dust and it could bolster your memory? It could create stronger neural pathways to information. I mean, you wouldn't have to study so much, right?
It's pretty fascinating, because we're talking about not only using this technology to bridge gaps and to serve as a bridge where an area was damaged, but just to speed up the connections, to improve the overall road. To where you have, just imagine, again, to use the analogy of the mountain roads, where you have lots of bridges, not because the road is unsafe, but because this makes the transportation faster, smoother, and altogether more effective.
Right. It's a kind of cure-all, because not only would it be helpful for, say, stroke victims or someone with, macular degeneration in this case, but because conceivably it could work in the same way that Nuremberg is using her system. But yeah, it could just give you that sort of lift that everybody has been fantasizing about and thinking about in terms of upgrading your brain in a way that it runs faster and smoother, as you say.
Yeah, and you could have like a daily or weekly email that you receive telling you what your, almost like your web traffic for your website, except you would have a readout saying, hey, this is how your brain's doing. This is your neural activity for a given day, a given week.
Yeah, and here's the thing. Again, this is, we're not just talking about output here. Working with implanted prosthetic devices, but we're also talking about input. And while this doesn't work on an electromagnetic frequency, it does work on that sort of ultrasound. In fact, the neural pixie dusts are called tuning forks for ultrasound. The idea is that maybe you could still kind of hack into this system, and that would be a problem, right? You could hack into someone's neural circuitry and have them doing things.
Oh, so you don't mean just in the sense of life hacking, where I'm improving my brain by having the neural pixie dust. You're talking about an outsider hacking into the device that's attuned with my neural pixie dust and essentially hacking my brain, hacking my memory, even hacking my perception of reality or my actual consciousness.
Yeah. Now, of course, this is all predicated on the idea that we have a much better idea of how the brain works in 20 or 30 years. And we have a kind of technology that's so pervasive that people would have access to these systems. But what if all of that came together and we all had neural pixie dust spread throughout our brains to help us, right? To help us remember things, to help us do things. And I could say, go and hack the system for you and say, I would really love for Robert to do 10 cartwheels today. And who knows that you could get that sophisticated. But that's a possibility. I mean, that's the wonderful and horrific thing about this kind of technology, is you can really go off the deep end. And kind of go to the dark side and imagine all of these things. Of course, we know that science has a lot of integrity, and that technology so far has been not used really that much for ill will. But
oh no, I can't think of a single single example of technology being used to hurt anyone.
Well, no. Yes, you have a point there. But I guess what I'm saying is that I so far have not been able to pick up on the black market yet an exoskeleton that can sort of let me rampage through the streets of Atlanta.
That's true. So, you know, maybe this will be a technological advancement that society will be able to stay abreast of instead of letting it get ahead of society, as we often do with technological advancements.
That would be the hope. But here's something I want to say out to any kids listening. If you guys are interested in neuroscience and you're also interested in engineering or even chemistry or mathematics, you might want to consider joining up with the neuroscientists on this, because as they were saying on the panel, they need people who are coming from these different disciplines, even like physics, mm-hmm. to help figure out how some of these technologies work with the brain and how best to do this. It's not just neuroscientists figuring out. They need other disciplines to really make this work.
Yeah, otherwise, how are we going to get to the point where you can actually download a copy of your brain and have that stored away, potentially for safekeeping? And we could reach the point where I instantly think of the book Altered Carbon by writer Richard K. Morgan, in which you have individuals who have, or certainly individuals who can afford it, the super rich, for instance, who have copies of their brain backed up. So that if something happens to their body, they can just have their mind re-sleeved into a new body. Or you want to explore another planet, you just have a copy of your mind sent at the speed of light to this location where it can be put into a new body or a robotic body to do whatever needs to be done.
Yeah, but before all this happens, again, they need to put the rubber to the road here and figure out how the brain works. Also, technology, they need to upgrade here because, you know, using fMRI to look at these neuronal spikes is not a perfect science, because that neuronal activity is happening at something like 1/1000th of a second, but the imaging itself is only happening at 1 second. So it's not a true picture of the brain and what's happening.
Right. But through this technology, we will conceivably have a much better idea of what the brain is doing.
Yeah, and Maharibbitz said that where we are with the brain is a lot like where we were with cosmology right before the Hubble telescope, right? And just like the Hubble telescope allowed us to really peer into space and get an idea of the breadth and depth of it, he's saying there are technologies coming online now that will allow us to do the same thing with the brain, that middle space that we don't know much about.
Hmm. Now, you know, you were talking about hacking earlier, the idea of someone hacking into your personal thoughts, into the inner workings of your brain.
Yeah.
I can't help but wonder. So right now we as a civilization, or we as a culture anyway, are obsessed with the lives of celebrities,
mm-hmm.
and or not even necessarily celebrities, but sort of the reality stars, just some sort of ordinary person that's thrust in the limelight. And we get to watch everything they're doing. But imagine a future where it would maybe not even be their lives, but their actual thoughts we could tap into. Or if someone's a great thinker, perhaps their thoughts would be considered art. Thought art. And for that matter, then, is there such thing as hate thought? Could you be prosecuted for hate thought?
Well, that's the idea, right? Because all of a sudden you would have access to neuronal activity that would point to your subconscious. And we know the subconscious is down under there making all of these mm-hmm. diabolical decisions for us, things that we aren't really aware of until it reaches the surface of consciousness. So if you were able to peer into your subconscious via this technology, would you become super aware, a really self-aware person, or would you become super paranoid that, you know, someone was able to predict your movements before you could even complete that thought?
Yeah. What if Google ends up selling your subconscious to advertisers in the future? What if hackers, what if you turn in the news one day, sorry, hackers got into Amazon and they stole everybody's subconscious and their credit cards?
But don't worry, we'll monitor your credit card for a full year. Dark stuff, my friend, but fascinating and wonderful in the current abilities to actually help people who need that bridge from A to C.
Yeah. And I mean, that's the bottom line here, looking at, especially in the near term, ways that this technology can drastically improve the lives of people who need to have that gap bridge, that need links in their neural chain reforged.
Indeed.
All right, so there you have it, neural pixie dust. I'm sure everyone has some thoughts on this particular topic, be it the near-term health applications that we were talking about or the long-term science fiction-y stuff. Either way, we'd love to hear from you with your insight on this. You can reach us out to us in a number of different ways. As always, go to stufftoblowyourmind.com. That's the mothership. That's where you will find all of our blog posts, all of our podcasts, all of our videos, links out to our social media accounts. And, hey, be sure to go to YouTube, where we are Mind Stuff Show. Check out all of our video series, including this fabulous new elevator series. It is wonderful, quirky stuff. As I think I was explaining to somebody recently, our video projects, I feel like we're trying to do different scoops of ice cream for different viewers. So whereas the Monster Science series might be a bit too cotton candy and gummy worms for some listeners, some viewers rather, the information elevator, I feel like, is more what's a refined but creative ice cream flavor.
Maybe a lemon thyme sorbet.
Yeah. Or I had this one the other day, an actual ice cream. It was dates and balsamic vinegar.
Yeah, but now I feel like you're kind of like we're talking about Park Avenue here.
Yeah?
Yeah.
We can be Park Avenue.
We can.
Some of our stuff is Park Avenue. Monster right. Science is not Park Avenue.
This is sort of like...
I feel like elevator, information elevator might be.
This is sort of like someone who might hang out in your elevator on Park Avenue.
Okay.
And they're not really paid to be there, but they hang out there.
That's perfect.
And they stalk
you.
That's the analogy. Yeah, yeah. Thanks for the call out. Yeah, and guys, if you haven't checked out Monster Science, you gotta do it, because it is a wonderful, like, gummy worm packed full of ice cream, supernormal stimuli shot of science.
That's right. That's what we're trying to do here.
All right. You guys have thoughts. We want to hear them, and you can send them to blowthemind@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 Gs in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right. That's right.